Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Freedom Report podcast. I'm your host, Austin Peterson, and today is Tuesday, September the 29th, almost the end of September. Boy, this month has really flown by, and it's been kind of a crazy month. If you guys have been following what's been going on online, you've probably seen that I've decided to run for president. Yes, I have decided that I will seek the Libertarian Party nomination, and so if that's news to you, well, hey, welcome to my world. And today I want to talk about a topic that's at the sort of the top of everyone's minds when we talk about third parties in the debates, because I'm seeking the nomination for the Libertarian Party, which is the third largest party after the Republicans and Democrats. And if I were to win their nomination, if I were to beat Gary Johnson at the convention, which is a possibility, albeit I think it's like climbing a mountain, but I think it's an actual possibility, then if that's the case, I would be on the ballot in what appears to be about 48 states and the District of Columbia. And so there are two states that are outliers, which it's almost impossible to get on the ballot here in the United States in a lot of ways. We actually have some of the toughest election laws in the world in terms of the ability to get on the ballot. I think the Libertarian Party spends about a third of all of their time and money just trying to get candidates on the ballot, which is, it's funny because we pride ourselves on spreading democracy all over the world, you know, like, let's bring democracy to Iraq and let's bring democracy to Afghanistan. Well, don't you think we could use a little bit of that democracy at home? I sure do. But perhaps we are going to be stuck in this sort of two-party system for a while. I'm going to try and break through it and we'll see how well I do. But today we're going to talk about the debates specifically, because debates are important. We're going to have debates amongst the Libertarian candidates, and then there is the issue of whether or not the Libertarian or whoever would be constitutionally eligible and from the third parties would be allowed to debate with the two major party candidates. And a good buddy of mine named Bruce Majors wrote an article on his website, which is called Insomniac Libertarian. Thank you very much, Bruce. And I also appreciate Bruce because he shared a video upload of my interview on John Stossel last weekend that I did with Stossel to announce my interview. And some people complain because John didn't give me very much time, and he sort of like said, oh, you're not old enough to run, you know. And of course, I countered by saying I will be constitutionally eligible by the time that it's necessary. But people were kind of giving John a hard time. You guys, you have to understand how these news anchors think. You know, like, I'm not a celebrity. You know, to you, I might be famous. Leif Bieber, if you know my nickname, Leif Bieberson, you probably think Austin Peterson, oh, he's famous. But I'm not famous. John Stossel is famous. John Stossel is like A-list, B-list celebrity. Like, Leif Bieberson is, well, it's life on the D-list. Until I can make myself legit. And that's what we're going to talk about today when it comes to the debates. You know, what does it take to be legit? What does it take to be mainstream? I'm going to be reading from Bruce Major's blog. He wrote a shorter version that appeared in the Daily Caller, but they cut me out of it. So he published and see, now that's what I was going to bring up. Why am I being cut out? Well, it's not just censorship. It's that the news networks don't think I'm newsworthy. And that's for several reasons that we're going to discuss today. And we'll talk about what it means to be legit and how you can get legit and how you can, you know, sort of assert yourself in order to, you know, become more of a celebrity, how to become, you know, a credible presidential candidate. Because in the eyes of the media, I'm not a presidential candidate until I pass certain lines, until I do, you know, reach certain goals. So it's important that we as libertarians, if we are interested in running for office, or if you want to be elected, that you understand how the media works, how they think. Even friendly media outlets, you know, like John Stossel, he's not going to devote a whole hour show just talking to me, because I'm not famous. I'm not, you know, rich and powerful. I'm not going to be somebody that he thinks is going to get a lot of ratings for his show. Now, I think he's wrong. I think if he had me on, he'd have a great show for and get lots of ratings. But I'm biased. Aren't we all biased towards ourselves? I think I would do a good job. But I don't blame John for thinking that it may not be that big of a deal that I've announced. He may think that I'm joking or that I'm not a serious candidate or that he may think that I can't beat Gary Johnson. As a matter of fact, I think he endorsed Gary Johnson last time around. Or actually, no, he endorsed Gary Johnson this time. Now I'm remembering, Stossel actually said on the Republican ticket that Rand is his candidate, but on the Libertarian ticket, Gary is his. And so he didn't know that I was running at the time that he said that. So maybe he's starting to think about it. I know a lot of people who have said, oh, Austin, now that you're running in the primary, I was a solid Gary vote, but now I'm more of a toss-up. And I've actually had people who have... mostly secretly, said to me, Austin, I was a Gary supporter, but now I'm going to support you for sure. And so that kind of stuff happens all the time, of course, in politics. And, you know, you have to always take what people say with a grain of salt. Some people say one thing and they do another, as you well know. But perhaps I think a lot of people are starting to think and change their minds about the possibility that I could be on the ballot and represent libertarians. You know, a lot of people don't want me to because they think I'm not a good spokesman for libertarians, but that's not everybody. And I did alienate a lot of the libertarian community or the liberty community by doing things such as questioning the Confederate flag and denying that 9/11 was an inside job. And so that angers a lot of people in the liberty movement. There are a lot of libertarians who identify with the Confederacy. There are a lot of libertarians who are conspiracy theorists and truthers. And what's interesting, and I noticed this, was that yesterday Ben Swan published an interview from his news magazine, Truth and Media. And it was a nice long interview with me and a discussion about the issues. And when you saw Ben Swan's commenters compared to my own people, so Ben Swan shared it on his page and I shared it on my page. Now, these are two very similar communities, but they're very different in terms of their ideological background and their sort of way of thinking. Of course, all my people who are similar to me were all like, oh, yay, this is great. We love that Ben's covering you. This is a tremendous interview, blah, 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 which you would expect. But then Ben's supporters, who I would say makes up a lot of libertarians as well, they hate me, man. They cannot stand Austin Peterson. I mean, you should see it. It's like, you know, Austin Peterson is the biggest idiot ever. 100 likes. You know, Austin Peterson's a douche. 150 likes. And there's a large anti-Austin contingent out there. And people are like, Austin, what are you going to do to win these people over? Blah, blah, blah. Nothing, because honestly, it does me no good to have people, to try and win over people who already despise me. Politics isn't about trying to win over people who despise you necessarily. Sometimes you do need to do that, but most of the time you have to find people who are either on the fence or undecided, because those people are much more likely to change their mind and get off the fence and vote for you. So people are like, oh, Austin, you got to win libertarians and stuff. Well, you know, a lot of libertarians don't vote, and most libertarians who comment on Facebook don't appear at conventions. But the people who do appear at conventions, who I know, who I've been, because I've been at conventions for the last 9 years, those people tend to like me. Those people tend to like me because the people who show up tend to be the more pragmatic types, and those are the people who know me well. Most of the people who don't like me don't know me, and the people who do know me do like me. And so there is a bit of a disconnect here. And remember, everybody likes to throw rocks at things that are shiny. I think that was a Taylor Swift line. You know, haters gonna hate, but you know, that's something that you have to get used to if you're trying to accomplish anything, ladies and gentlemen. You know, if you just say you're going to seek the nomination of the Libertarian Party, there will automatically, trust me, there will automatically be a constituency of haters, okay? Because those haters are going to come from different sources. Some of them are going to genuinely dislike you because they dislike you as a person, okay? Then there are going to be the people who are paid shills for another campaign, right? So they don't want you to win because they like Gary Johnson or they like, Steve Perry or Gerard Perry or Steve Kerbal or Mark Feldman, whatever. And so you have to expect that and not be surprised, not be blindsided, and remember that you do have supporters. You know, I do have my supporters, and those people are fervent, and those are the people that you have to activate and go out and search for more on the fence and undecideds in order to add to your ranks. So in the Liberty Movement, we have these multiple different factions, and some of them are completely opposed to me. That's fine. That's their business. You know, they want to go along with the 9/11 conspiracies. That's their business. They want to go along with the anti-GMO stuff that's not libertarian because they want to regulate the free market. That's their business. And in general, they don't like my style. That's their business. You know, one of the reasons people like Austin, you know, you don't listen to libertarians and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, you know, the reason I've been so successful spreading libertarian ideas is because I don't listen to what libertarians have to say about spreading libertarian ideas, for the most part. For the most part. I listen to some. Only if you're smarter than me. If I think you're smarter than me. And a lot of the people, the resistance comes from people in the movement who are sort of egalitarians, right? These are people who are like, oh, Austin, you've got a big ego. And I just say, I just turn it right around on them and say, ego is the fountainhead of all human progress, said Ayn Rand. And I am a Randian in the sense that, I do think that a lot of these people who oppose my candidacy are doing so because they think I'm an egotist, right? Well, I am, and I'm proud to be proud of myself. I think maybe a lot of people liked Ron Paul because he was humble, and humility has its place in the loser's circle. It has its place in the philosophy of the losers. And I hope that you understand that that in order to win, in order to be great, you have to believe in your own greatness. If you do not believe that you are better, then why are you running for the job? Somebody's like, well, why do you think you're better? And I had to explain to them why I think I'm better. And then they're like, oh, so it's all about you? I'm like, you asked about why I thought personally I was a better pick than Gary Johnson. And there are a lot of reasons why I think I'm a better pick than Gary Johnson. You know, executive experience, they say, well, he's got all this executive experience. I'm like, well, his executive experience didn't help him win in the last election. So what exactly do you think it's going to change this time around? Okay, and the executive experience that he had didn't get him in the debates last time. And so now we're going to talk about the debates. And I'm going to read this article from Bruce Majors, and we're going to talk about this in more depth. House Speaker John Boehner resigned only a year after House Majority Leader Eric Cantor was defeated by a Tea Party newbie in a primary. In the GOP presidential nomination race, three candidates who have never held office are in the lead, holding between them the support of almost two-thirds of Republican primary voters. It's hunting season on establishment politicians. Carly Fiorina beats Hillary Clinton in a poll released today, 44% to 43%, demonstrating the power of open primary debates, where Fiorina's performance launched her from the early kitty event of the first GOP debate to prime time for the second Republican face-off. Fiorina, like Dr. Ben Carson before her, is slowly catching up to frontrunner Donald Trump. And like Trump, she is beginning to get a lot of earned media, including appearances on both cable news and late-night talk shows. Meanwhile, Hillary Clinton continues to flail in the polls, seesawing between, seesawing with Sanders week by week as to who wins Iowa and New Hampshire, the first states to hold primaries, and with Sanders and as yet unannounced Joe Biden together catching up to her nationally. It's the year of the outsider, the commentariat tells us. But that may prove true in more ways than they think. Since very few straw polls and no primaries or caucuses have happened yet, debates are taking center stage in election coverage. Democrats had denigrated the GOP for its clown car of almost 20 contenders, and Fox and CNN were forced by logistics to split GOP debates into a primetime event for people getting over 2 to 3% in polls, and a junior varsity debate earlier, though the primetime debate itself has had 10 or 11 candidates, prompting some libertarian wags to say they hope the GOP will still favor having more than only two candidates after the primary selection is over. Yeah, right. Good luck with that. Meanwhile, the Democratic National Committee is facing rebellion, having decided to support, for now, the coronation of Hillary Clinton by cutting debates back from the 28 it held in 2008 to only six for the 2016 primary season. You hear that? 28 debates were held in 2008. There's only six debates happening for the Democrats in 2016. The Democratic group allowed debate organized by young progressive Democrats, sometimes supporting Bernie Sanders over former Governor Martin O'Malley, have been heckling DNC chairwoman Congresswoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz whenever she speaks in public. The plot doesn't seem to have helped Hillary much. The DNC plan was to restrict debates to only six, quote, sanctioned debates between Democrats. If you're a Democratic candidate, Lawrence Lessig, Bernie Sanders, Governor O'Malley, Senator Jim Webb, former Senator Lincoln Chafee, Vice President Joe Biden, and you participate in an outside primary debate between Democrats, Debbie Wasserman Schultz will block you from the six nationally televised and sanctioned debates. With no television exposure, your chance of competing with Queen Hillary is much diminished. But what if you speak somewhere else? All the candidates do that every week. And what if the speaking event is a debate, just not with other Democrats? A former local Ohio television journalist, Ben Swan, with Ron Paulish predilections and a new media platform, claims to be, quote, actively in dialogue with both candidates, Rand Paul and Bernie Sanders, to have a libertarian-leaning capitalist versus democratic socialist debate before the GOP or the Democrats have even finished selecting a nominee. Both of these candidates could profit from the coverage, helping them in their ongoing respective primaries, as well with as with fundraising and earned media. If Swan pulls off this event, it's hard to believe other venues, including the exploding number of new media platforms, won't copy it, with debates featuring Senator Ted Cruz against Governor O'Malley, etc. They might not be carried on TV live, but clips of any such debates will be replayed the next day, and they will earn the debaters interviews and other coverage. Besides a loud debate and the possibility of a Paul-Sanders debate, a third threat to an establishment-controlled election is a lawsuit to be filed September 29th in federal court by former New Mexico Governor Gary Johnson against the Commission on Presidential Debates. Johnson, who left the GOP to win the nomination of the Libertarian Party in 2012, is best known recently for a humorous stunt in March at CPAC, where he mimed cardiac arrest while in a debate with a woman who claimed marijuana increases the risk of heart attack. Since then, he's become the CEO of a West Coast marijuana company and seems to plan on trying to get the LP nomination in 2016. The Libertarians have their own herd of candidates, mainly unknowns, even in Libertarian Party circles, with the next best-known candidate after Johnson being 34-year-old Austin Peterson, a former producer for Judge Andrew Napolitano's show Freedom Watch. Peterson, who recently moved back from Washington, D.C. to his hometown of Peculiar, Missouri to launch his campaign, will be constitutionally required 35 years old before the election. But Johnson's advisors, who included Trump guru Roger Stone in 2012, and his campaign staff say he is unlikely to be the sacrificial victim for a quixotic libertarian campaign unless the libertarians are assured at least the possibility of being in the primary presidential debates, hence Johnson's lawsuit. Man, this is tough. Yeah, I think I'll wait until the end to comment on this. Estimated to run up $800,000 in legal bills. Goodness. The suit has been put together by Reagan administration constitutional lawyer Bruce Fein, whose work on opening up political debate includes getting rid of the Fairness Doctrine, an FCC policy which had the result of coercing broadcasters into presenting only two centrist viewpoints, liberal Democrats and Rockefeller establishment Republicans. Fein's Johnson suit will be an antitrust suit, alleging that the Commission on Presidential Debates, populated and controlled by only establishment Democrat and Republican Party operatives, limits the candidates allowed to debate only to the nominees of those two parties, even if other candidates like Libertarians or Greens have managed the extremely difficult task of being on the majority of state ballots, so they could earn enough Electoral College votes to win an election. If voters knew they were running and considered them viable because they were presented in the same way on television and in the debates as the GOP and Democratic candidates. Fein further alleges that the debate commission is a business in restraint of trade since the Republican and Democratic consultant class raise billions of dollars now to pay themselves during the campaign season, and raising the money is dependent on excluding independent competition for donor dollars. Now, I am just appalled at this. Now, listen, if you believe that the ends justify the means, by all means, support this lawsuit. You know, if Gary Johnson won this suit and then I beat him, which would be horrible for Johnson, all he would do is sort of spend a lot of money to help me get in the debates. And, you know, God bless them for that. That would be fantastic. However, I am just morally and ethically appalled by the use of antitrust laws in order to try and force private parties to debate with a third party. I mean, libertarians believe in voluntary association. So, I mean, this really sends a bad message. And especially when it comes to antitrust laws. I mean, I don't think they're going to win this case. I think they're going to spend a whole lot of almost $1 million, $800,000, trying to fight this court case that's anti-libertarian in the way that they're using it. And then they might not even win. So it's going to be a double bad PR move for the Libertarian Party if this suit loses, which I expect it to do. If it won, I would probably be excited and happy because I would see Johnson in the debates. You know, again, guys, I'm trying to be objective here. You know, I know that I'm a candidate, but you know, my journalist hat comes on so often it gets me in trouble because people would rather I probably just be biased and not honest about it. But I do have misgivings about this, and I want to voice them because I think that it's probably not the best way to go that we say we want to force association, we want the government to force people to associate with one another, because, you know, the Republican and the Democratic parties are like the Libertarian Party. They're not government institutions. They exist outside of government. And if those two parties don't want to associate with a third party, I mean, that's their business. I mean, they do profit and benefit from keeping out other parties and from keeping other people from debating them. But let me tell you why I think that this is not going to be a problem in the near future. I believe that in the near future, that the hold that the mainstream media has, because remember, these debates are only, they're pushed out on mainstream media, right? So the cable news networks. Those cable news networks are losing their market share and they're losing their power. So in the future, I can see that we will have many more opportunities to get our message out to the people in credible ways that the voters will trust. And when that happens, the stranglehold of power that the two parties have will be solved by the free market. And I think that it's better for us, from an optical point of view, it's better for us to demonstrate that the free market works rather than say, you know, resort to the tactics of our enemies and say, hey, we're going to use the government to force something because the market isn't doing what we like. Does that make sense? So, though most might still think it's unlikely, courts may be deciding within a year whether the presidential debates will, for the first time, include a libertarian or a green. And as many Americans have griped in the past few years, what SCOTUS or the other courts will do may not be what you'd expect. And in recent years, some of the more presentable candidates, like Robert Sarvis, who ran for governor of Virginia, have been getting 5% of the vote instead of their traditional 1 to 2%, even while spending much less dollars per vote than Democrats or Republicans, who often spend $10 to $20 for each vote they receive. Johnson's campaign released a press advisory today listing the other people joining in the suit from various third parties, but it didn't come out until, I guess, this morning. The two-party duopoly is somewhat baked into the American electoral system. Unlike European parliamentary systems, the U.S. has winner-take-all jurisdictions, usually featuring two candidates, one of whom, usually a Democrat, will tax Americans and regulate their choices and opportunities to buy the votes of organized interest groups like government sector unions and bailed-out banks, and his or her usually Republican opponent, who often only says he won't do it as much or as quickly. But the two-party system has been suffering as of late, with 40% of voters deciding not to vote for either of its candidates, with Governor Sarah Palin denouncing the consultant class, with pundit Dick Morris going kersplat in 2012 with his predictions that Romney would win, and Karl Rove perhaps only hanging, according to Trump, on by a few fingers. It's interesting that of all of these things, outsiders like Carson, Trump, and Fiorina, who can set up their own fundraising websites, rank-and-file Democrats who can tweet flash mob locations to heckle Chairwoman Wasserman Schultz, new media journalists who can contemplate sponsoring a non-sanctioned bipartisan debate, and even Governor Johnson's fundraising for an antitrust lawsuit are greatly enhanced by the internet and social media. The two-party system and the ruling cabals of consultants and the political class within those two parties has long been protected by ballot access laws, keeping independents off the ballot. The oligopoly of a few TV networks and newspapers or press services deciding who can be covered, and the party machinery deciding who will get its pre-organized volunteers. Just as Amazon, Netflix, PayPal, Silk Road, Uber, Lyft, and other internet-based businesses have been wiping out older models, 2016 may be the year that technological change finally begins to break or transform the two-party monopoly. And that was a tremendous article by Bruce Majors, and I hope I'm going to ask him for permission to repost this article today at the Libertarian Republic. So what do you guys think about this? Do you think that the case against, that there's a case for suing the private parties, the Republican and Democratic parties, using antitrust laws? I don't know, guys. Seems like a big waste of money. I mean, $800,000, that could be used to get the Libertarian Party candidate on the ballot in those last two states. It doesn't seem to me like it's a good move, but Governor Johnson is a smart man, and I do have great respect for him, and especially his buddy Bruce Fein, who is somebody else that I have great respect for. And I guess I do hope that they succeed, but that's of course my ends justify the means speaking there. But I'm very uncomfortable with the means that we're using here, and I hope that we can find better ways to solve these problems. I really do think that we are, like what Bruce Majors has said here, that we're going to find that the new media and technology is going to break the stranglehold of the consultant class and the political establishment. Do you agree? Send us an email. Go to thelibertarianrepublic.com. Send us an email. Tell us a little bit more. If you liked the podcast today, do me a favor. Subscribe to us on iTunes. You can find the Freedom Report podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Also, here's a little announcement. If you stuck around this long, you get to hear this. But I'm actually going to be stepping down as editor of the Libertarian Republic full-time and transferring my responsibilities over to a new editor whose name's Keith Farrell, and he'll be taking care of you guys throughout the election season. He's somebody that I trust, and he'll do a great job on spreading the message of economic freedom and personal liberty. So don't forget to come back every single day to your home for economic freedom and personal liberty at the Libertarian Republic.